Welcome to the top.
1%. Oh, yeah.
1% of show. I'm Paul Salamanca.
And I'm Tom Bocard. Thanks for joining us today to learn how some of the top 1% CEOs, sales leaders, coaches, athletes, and other professionals have overcame adversity and built their top 1%er mindset.
That's right. And this show is live, 6 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. If you want to see one of these shows live, you could go to our home base, which is top1percenter.com. You could also see links to previous episodes there or download the show where all podcasts are available. So, Tom, let's get into this next guest, this next show. I'm looking forward to it.
Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%.
All right, welcome to the top. I'm your host, Paul Salamanca, along with Tom Bocard, co-founders of the Top 1% Academy, the first ever sales coaching at scale company where we combine SaaS with coaching services for high growth companies and sales professionals designed to transform average salespeople into top performing sales teams in their respective industries. We have proven over and over again that with the right mindset, dedication, combined with our top sales methodology, anyone can make it to the top 1% in sales. But don't take my word for it. Let's hear from some of our graduates who have made it to the top 1% in their sales leaderboard within 6 months of graduating from the top academy.
I was 200% a quota last month.
Top rep in North America month two.
Well, I got promoted. So that, and I think the academy definitely helped with that.
Because I just hit back-to-back months, which nobody on our team's done.
Our sales in the last month have really increased or doubled since January.
Well, I am honestly pretty confident in saying that I am the best AE on my team.
It's the way to be. You gotta be a top 1%er. You gotta seek out the best in everything you do. You gotta have the confidence and you gotta learn the skill sets to do it.
And that was just a few of many great results, but we have a show to get to, so let's get started. Today, very, very happy to announce our guest, Lee Blakemore, Chief Executive Officer of IntroHive, a company north of 30 million in revenue. IntroHive is in the field of relationship intelligence. So what they do is they help large firms harness the relationships they have across the organization. And we'll get more into that. Previously, Lee was president of Blackboard and started his career in sales. So Lee, welcome to the show.
Oh, happy to be here.
So Lee, before the show, we talked about many different things, and it was a pretty easy conversation because I'm talking to a fellow sales person at heart. How did you get into sales, and what do you think is the biggest difference between when you got into sales to now newcomers getting into sales today?
Yeah, Paul, I took my first sales job territory in 1991. So I'll go ahead and just throw that out there. That's how old I am. Graduated from college and got right into it. And I'd like to say I had some grand plan or strategy, but you know, sales was just sort of the job I could get at the time, to be honest. And but I've never looked back, frankly, and it's been turned out to be a fantastic career for me and one that I've enjoyed tremendously. And even though my title says something different, I still think of myself as just a sales guy. In regards to, you know, today, what it's like versus, you know, back then, if you will, a lot of things have changed. You know, your ability to pick up the phone and call people, your ability to walk in their door, go to their office, all that sort of stuff. Obviously, that has all changed dramatically. So it's extremely difficult to sort of purse through sort of the veneer, the walled garden, if you will, to get access to people. So that's changed tremendously. At the same time, the things that haven't changed is the fact that sales actually is, there's a science to it. It is an art. It is something that you have to practice and practice and practice. There's a methodology to it. There is a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And if you look across the successful people, one of the common denominators you're going to find is that they actually practice at the job, and they practice, and they take it seriously. And I think that's a common reason why people are successful, and that has not changed.
So I promise everyone listening, I did not pay Lee to say that, because I say that every episode. It's easier said than done, but it takes a special type of individual, a top 1%er, to not be told, not be forced to practice, but practice and master their craft behind the scenes. And today, a lot of salespeople are practicing in front of the customer. So when you said you got into sales, most people get into sales and they figure, you know what, this is just a temporary role. But once you make that switch mentally to say, this is now going to be my career, I want to be the best at it. How did you make that decision? When did you make that decision? Earlier in your career, or did it take you some time?
Well, I was fortunate early on in my career when I started. I went to work for a company that had a proper, I'll say proper in quotes, you know, sales training program, sort of 9 months of training, you know, both in-house and in the field, and, you know, teaching all the things as simple as, you know, what's the difference between an open-ended question and a closed-ended question, yeah, and all these sort of basic selling thing. And so right there, I sort of saw that, man, there's a, you know, this thing, there's a practice to this thing. There's a skill here, right? It's just like learning how to be a tradesman and, you know, being a construction person or a plumber or an electrician. You got to learn the trade.
Yep.
And that's what that company instilled in me. And from that point forward, I took the trade serious. And I think if you make the equation or a comparison to athletes, there's a lot of people that are good athletes, natural athletes when they get into high school and college. But if you want to be, if you want to stay in a professional level and continue to be top of your game 10, 15, 20 years into it, those folks are in the gym. Those folks are practicing. Those folks are training. And so for me, I recognize in order for me to stay on top of my game, I had to keep practicing the trade.
And it looks like, obviously, you have a successful career, but it looks like you got into sales leadership fairly quickly in your career, VP of worldwide sales at Epicor Software. And then you continued on and then eventually getting into IBM. What was the biggest shift for you going from individual contributor to sales leadership?
Yeah, there's several things. And frankly, my first management job, I think I took when I was 27, and I was horrible at it. And I learned a lot. But it's one thing to sort of, you know, be a seller. And then if you become a manager thinking, well, I'm just going to take a sales rep and attach him or her to my hip and go do the job and let them assist me. And that approach isn't scalable. It's not sustainable. And so actually making the switch to being a coach, being a manager, and trying to sort of work with your team and get your team to be successful in their own right, which requires a tremendous amount of patience. That to me was the biggest change, is learning to be patient. It's kind of like if you have children, teaching them to tie their shoes, you know, that's a very painful, patient requiring process, because there's always some time when you're late to go out the door and your child's trying to tie the shoe and they're like, you know, waking up the bunny and going around and trying. And you're like, I don't have time for this. But you know what? If you don't take the time and let them learn, they will never learn how to tie your shoe. And so it's teaching, you know, managing sales reps is the same way. You have to take the time and be patient and help them be successful on their own right. And that's the biggest difference.
That's a great analogy. One of the biggest, for me, the biggest mindset change going from individual contributor to sales leader was it took me a little while to get used to realizing that everyone has their own style, and that's okay. Not everyone's going to sell the way I sell. But to your point, there's still the fundamentals of sales. There's still the way you should do things the right way. There should still be a good framework. What was the biggest difference going from your previous companies to a company like IBM that's absolutely massive? I'm sure they have a great training program as well.
Yeah, it was. I was acquired into IBM in, I think, 2005. And I went from a company that had a couple hundred employees to IBM. And it was a completely different experience, frankly. You know, first, if you're managing sales and sales teams at scale, all of a sudden you're managing a business with numbers and data and spreadsheets versus managing pipelines and reps and people and opportunities. And so there's definitely a difference of sort of managing a sales organization where you have 400, 500, 600 salespeople, and you have to manage that kind of a business by looking at the numbers and managing data, which is much different than if you're an RVP and you have 6 reps and you're managing the business that way. So that was one of the things that was different. The other thing is just the name recognition. You know, it's a different set of challenges. When you work at a company like an IBM, and there's 10 others you could name here, you know, you have name recognition, you get access. And so there's a different set of challenges you have because you get the access. It's all about showing the ability to be successful, the ability to execute, competing against the other competitors, et cetera. Whereas if you're working for a smaller company, you spend a lot of your energy and you burn a lot of calories just trying to get in the door. So the set of challenges and the nature of the challenges changes when you go from working at a small firm to a large firm. But there's challenges in either scenario.
And speaking of changes and challenges, I'm sure there were some challenges going from VP of Worldwide Sales to becoming a president of a company at Blackboard. So you're a president a couple of times. This is your first chief executive role. What was that shift going from running sales to now becoming a president? What's the difference?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for me, when I was in sales, I think one of the reasons why I was successful was I understood my product really well, and I understood the business really well, and I spent the time to learn a lot of different aspects of the business, which on the one hand allowed me or enabled me to be a great seller and a great sales leader, but it also set me up to sort of take on more responsibility. And so some of it is just a curiosity to what's going on in the business and what are the constraints in business. And when you sort of, you take a step back, you know, sort of get on the balcony, if you will, when you're in sales, it's all about navigating your way through obstacles, overcoming obstacles, trying to find out where the risk is, where the pressure is, and all those sort of things. And actually, when you look at other parts of the business, there's a lot of similarities. It's really about understanding constraints, understanding challenges, understanding the objectives you're trying to accomplish, making sure the team you have is aligned, working on those common set of objectives, and then just continuing to ensure you have the right folks around the table. So there's a lot of commonality, frankly, with sales and running other parts of the business when you get a level or two higher. Obviously, if you get into the details, they're completely different worlds.
Right. And did you have a tendency to spend a little too much time in the sales arena when you were president, or did you not find it that hard to kind of step back?
Yeah, for me, I've been fortunate to focus on having a good team. That's been sort of one of the things I've been focused on from the get-go. And my sort of style, frankly, has been to, I try to put the best people I can in place and then just get the heck out of their way. And so for me, the transition from revenue or sales into the rest of the company, I just leaned on my team and went and focused on the other parts of the business. But also I was fortunate to have, you know, leaders in other parts of the company that were willing to spend the time to educate me where I needed to be educated, and, you know, I had to be curious. You know, if you're going to be successful in sales or in business in general, you got to learn to be curious. And if you're not naturally curious, you got to go figure out how to get curious, because you really need to go ask 1,000 questions and really understand all the different aspects of the business. So I was fortunate that I had a team that on the revenue side that I could sort of step away and let them do their thing. And then I had on engineering and product and finance and other areas, I had folks that were willing to spend the time and answer my 1,000 questions. So I'm sure which 900 of them were kind of dumb, but nonetheless, they took the time.
And at that point, were you thinking about next move for me, CEO? And then what is the difference, in your opinion, between a president and CEO? Did you feel like you were doing much of the CEO role as a president?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, now I'm old enough to sort of, you know, be self-aware and reflect. For me, I get excited out of, I call it like getting a new Rubik's Cube, if you will. So for me, as long as I got a problem to solve and a challenge I'm trying to sort of sort out, I'm engaged and I'm excited. And so I didn't really spend a lot of time thinking about what I'm going to go do next, because I was pretty engaged with trying to solve the problem at hand, if you will. And then once you kind of get to a spot where the business is running pretty well and things are going pretty well, then I start thinking about what to go do next. It's just kind of how I'm wired. Everybody's wired differently. In regards to, you know, president versus CEO, there's a lot of similarities. You know, as a president or as a CEO, you have business results you're responsible for. You're managing all the different aspects of the business, et cetera, et cetera. When you get to a CEO, then there's another aspect of working with the board of directors and or whoever your owners or investors are. Then you also get into things like financial structure and financing of the business and how you're going to come up with the funds needed for investment cases, if that's what you're going to go do. If you're going to do some M&A activity as a president, you may be making the decision from a strategy and a business case perspective. But as a CEO, you also got to think through the funding and the finance aspect. So there's an additional layer of complexity, I think, that between being a president versus a CEO. That's not always the case, but that's been what I've experienced so far.
What advice would you give to first-time CEOs presenting to the board? because I'm sure many of them have come from the revenue side, but what's the difference between presenting to the board as a revenue leader versus a chief?
I think, well, it's a couple of questions. So, you know, every board is different. And so, you know, partly that answer is sort of is contextual based on what's happening. But, you know, most board of directors that I've worked with over my career, and I've been in a lot of different board meeting settings, you know, everybody kind of wants to know the same thing. You know, what's going on with the business, you know, in the areas where you have challenges, you know, why do you have challenges? What are you doing about those challenges? How do you feel about things? And so I feel like being open and transparent with the board is always a good thing. And one of the things I notice is how much preparation did it require you to get ready for the board meeting? So this requires a ton of preparation for you to get ready for that board meeting. Then you have to ask yourself, either am I not running the business the right way, or do I need to have a discussion with my board about the questions they're asking me? Because in reality, when you walk into a board meeting, you should be able to take the most recent version of your monthly report of what's going on in the business and just go share it with them, right? There shouldn't be a whole lot of preparation required. So if you're finding yourself having to do a ton of preparation, then either you need to maybe think about changing the way you're running the business, or you need to go have a discussion with the board about what their expectations are of the meeting. That's my experience.
It's a great point. I've seen both sides where it takes not as long to prepare for the board meeting, where at other companies, it would almost take the last month of the quarter, which is pretty distracting.
Yeah, exactly. It's an indicator of something else if that's going on.
Yeah. So that's great, Lee. And then now, I know I gave a little bit of a backdrop on Intro Hive, but if you don't mind just telling us a little bit about what you're up to now and the type of salespeople and leaders you're bringing on board.
Yeah, you bet. Intro Hive is a really cool company, and I was attracted to it because I can totally relate to the problem we solve. And our main premise is that we believe, and we see it, that, you know, large firms are leaving money on the table because they're unable to sort of connect the dots between all the relationships that their firm possesses, and then those relationships with their prospects and their opportunities. So they're either not uncovering as much business as they could because they're not taking advantage of all the relationships their firm has, or they're on their existing relationships or opportunities. They're not really accelerating as much revenue, or they aren't exposing risk to their pipeline. And when you think about large companies, you know, there's a lot of different relationships there. And what IntroHive does is we surface those relationships, and then we put that data into your CRM for you. So most folks, if you ask them about your CRM, and regardless of the CRM vendor, you know, they'll tell you that the data in the CRM isn't that great. And when they log into the CRM to try to take a look at contact information and other sort of information, it's not often in the best shape. And I think there's a design issue with CRM, and that we want to use it to make data-driven decisions about what's going on with opportunities. But yet, in order for us to have that data, we require people who aren't really the best people to enter manually data into a system to actually go manually enter data into the system. So it's kind of a design flaw, if you will. And so we highlight those relationships for you, and we put that in your CRM, so then you can then answer the question, hey, does anybody know this CIO or this CFO or this CEO at this company? Because we're trying to do business there, and I need a way in. I bet you somebody at my firm knows somebody over there, but I don't know who knows who, and I really need to know who knows who.
And it's a little bit different from LinkedIn, because you know, you get probably a million requests to say, hey, do you know Susan at this company? Go look Susan up. You're like, I have no idea how I'm even connected to Susan.
It's exactly right. I have north of, I don't know, probably not as many connections as you, but I think I have north of 5,000, and you know, I don't know all those folks. So yeah, that's exactly right. So we actually highlight who knows who, and then we actually provide a relationship score. It actually shows how well you know that person. So you can actually see who knows who and who knows who how well, and you can also see the trend of that relationship.
Excellent. And you're growing really fast. You're selling to CMOs, chief business development officers. I would think it'd be more, I guess I was going to say maybe rev ops or chief revenue officers, but it's more marketing on the marketing side.
Well, it does vary. So we do business right now in a couple of different industries. So like in law firms, for instance, you see a chief business development officer and chief marketing officer, because in a law firm, they really don't have like a chief revenue officer kind of function, if you will.
Good point. Good point.
You get into a consulting kind of company there, they may have a chief revenue kind of officer. In that case, that person would be a target for us. In accounting firms, similar kind of dynamic. So where we've had a lot of success is, you know, large organizations where relationships are key to sort of selling and driving revenue, and where those large organizations are selling to other large organizations. And basically, you know that there's a connection here. If we could just find it, if we could just find that connection, it could probably accelerate our opportunity. Those are the industries and the sectors where we have a lot of success.
And speaking of success, you're having good success promoting from within. Talk to me about that. I know you gave me an example before the show of a BDR now being a regional VP. Is that pretty common with your, just with how you like to do it at any company, or is it just kind of unique to this company?
It's something I believe pretty strongly in that we should all try to take shots on people. And when you're an employee on a team or in a company, and after you sort of have established yourself, if you will, I think the employers owe you a shot to take chances on new things. And me myself, I've had a ton of success with people over the years, giving them a shot on something. And really, when you give somebody a chance to take on a new role, whether it is going from one discipline to the other, if I'm a sales engineer doing demos and I want to try sales, or if I'm a sales rep and I want to try management, or if I'm in marketing and I want to get into sales or whatever, you want an opportunity to give that a try. And then if it doesn't go super well, you want a safe place to land. Like you want to go out there with a life jacket or a life preserver, if you will. And so that's what you really have to offer to people. And then you have to support them, and you have to, train them and educate them and guide them and mentor them. And it doesn't have to be formal, but you do have to do that. And I've had a tremendous amount of luck and success with people over the years, doing just that. Now, it doesn't always work out that way, but in this case, success isn't whether they actually succeed at the job. Success is letting someone take a shot and working that to a successful conclusion, which could be, I tried out sales and I didn't like it, so I'm going to go back to being a sales engineer, and I'm super happy. And now I've answered that question, and I don't have any regrets, and I'm a super fulfilled employee. That's also success, right?
Yeah. So
and as you mentioned, we've had a couple of situations in the team. In one case, we have an individual over in London who started as a BDR, SDR sort of, lead gen kind of person, and worked their way into being an AE, a salesperson. And he was our top salesperson for a couple of years. And then a year ago, we moved him into being the RVP of our EMEA business. So he went from sort of being a BDR all the way up to now being a regional vice president managing the team in Europe for us. And he's doing a fantastic job.
Sounds like he's coming after your role soon.
I would love it. I would gladly step aside and give it to him.
That's awesome. And that's, Lee, that's rare. I mean, I'm really grateful for the mentors I had earlier in my career. I started my first company in college, went really well, that grew nationally. And then that I learned the big lesson about cash flow and longer sales cycle. So I used that to get my first real sales job in corporate America, but I didn't have the resume. I wasn't good on paper, but I had people take a shot on me . And I don't think many people do that anymore. It could be a byproduct of growth at all cost. Everyone's just chasing for the number. So how much pressure, like how do you balance that hitting the number versus doing what you feel is the right thing to do for long-term growth for people within your organization?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I, like you, I've benefited from a lot of people along the way helping me out. As leaders, we are responsible for results, period, point. That's it. And so you have to figure out how to both mentor people, develop people, bring them along, and also drive the results. So in a perfect world, you kind of manage it like a portfolio, right? So you have maybe some portion of your business, or if you have a team of salespeople, you have these folks that are going to do really, really well. And then you have one or two over here that you're sort of bringing and training along. Now you can't you know, and there's different sort of methodologies and how you rank your people and all that other stuff. But I think you want to work towards a position where you have a nice balance and some portion of your team or some portion of your direct reports or some portion of your business you are cultivating and developing, because those are going to be the folks that are going to be in the different category 2 years from now. And that's how you ensure that you always have a nice balance. And as people sort of move on and progress, you have a nice sort of progression and a backfill and a pipeline, if you will, of resources. If you don't do that, then somebody leaves and you're stuck. And so it's actually not only are you giving back, but it's actually smart. It's just a smart way to run the business and sort of have this nice balance. And if you don't have anybody that you're cultivating and developing, then you probably should go find that person and go work on that, because you're going to need that person 2 years from now when your good person moves on.
100%. I mean, there were scenarios where you never think your top salespeople would leave, but when one or two happen to leave, and sometimes they leave around the same time, really impacts the business. So you have to be developing people behind them. And we just went through your kind of progression within your career, very successful. You sound very, very calm, very cool, very collected, but I'm sure it wasn't always that way. If there was one moment in time where maybe you felt like things weren't going so well and maybe self-doubt crept in, what moment in time would that be?
Oh, I've had a few of those. You know, one of the funny things about being in sales is you can lose 99 times and you still wake up the next day. You think this is the day, right? And so that's just part of the DNA of salespeople. But I had an opportunity. I've had a couple of these along the way, but you know, one that comes to mind is back around 2001. I was working for a startup company. I won't get into the details, but that was pre-dot-com bust, dot-com version one. And I was living in London, and I kind of said, hey, look, I really think the business needs to go this way. And somebody else said, no, I think the business needs to go that way. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure we need to go this way. And so I want to go this way. And they said, nope, we're going to go the other way. And they let me go. And so there I was freshly married, didn't have children at the time, but I was freshly married and had to move home, lived with my dad for a little while with my new bride, thinking, all right, wow. How's this going, right? But it was 2000, 2001, the bubble hadn't crashed yet, and found another job. And that was a company that ended up getting acquired by IBM. And frankly, it actually worked out good for me. And from the perspective that—
Always that does.
If that had not happened, I would have stayed at that company for another 6 months. The dot-com bubble crashed, that company went bust. I would have been looking for a job like everybody else at that point in time. But because I forced their hand, I forced the situation and was let go, I was able to go find another job and basically a good place to work when things kind of went down. So as you say, you know, I believe, you know, when one door opens, the other, or one door closes, the other opens. And that's been my experience. And so it was tough at the time. And I've had a couple other of those things across my 30-year career, but one thing is very clear is that if you keep focusing on the things you know to be true and you keep working your tail off, good things will happen. And when one door closes, another one will open. And that's definitely been the case with me.
100%. One of the affirmations we say here at the Top Academy is, I believe in the perfect outcome of every situation. And it may not seem like the best possible outcome at the time, but you're always looking back grateful that that happened to you. And I hear so many, I know personally, but I also hear so many stories just like that. That's excellent, Lee. So before we go, I know we could talk for a very long time. Thanks for sharing that story. Any advice you'd give somebody looking to get into senior leadership for the first time?
That's a good question. It's certainly situational. I think you make two decisions. And I think this is with any sort of job change. You know, one is, yeah, I want to make this change and I want to be in senior leadership, right? You make that decision. Then the next decision is sort of, you know, when, where, and how, so to speak. But I think you have to sort of make them in two steps. And going into your first senior leadership position, you know, in a perfect world, you do it in an environment where you had sort of support and trust with the leadership team around you and or your manager. But you need to assess that, right? Because how you perform your job, how you operate, the risks you take, because oftentimes in this business you need to take risks. You need to have an assessment of sort of how much runway do you have, how sort of safe or secure are you. And if you're moving into a position for the first time, depending on your situation with your manager and the team around you, I'd want to understand what's the dynamics around the role? Because understanding that and sort of being situationally aware, and we always talk about in sales being situationally astute, you know, I think that's more true than ever when we think about taking a senior leadership position.
Easier said than done. Great advice. Very great advice. But it takes a special type of person to say, you know what? This is not a great environment for me to step into my first senior leadership role, and others may just do it anyway, just so they could have that on their resume, which there isn't a right or wrong answer, but it's a very tough, if you know it's not the right position, some people will still take a go at it just to get that on their resume. So great advice. I do appreciate you coming on the show, Lee. It was great having you on. And for everyone listening around the world, stay tuned for our next guest next week. Take care.
Welcome to the top.
Oh, yeah.
We killing annual quotas. It's the 1% show, in case you haven't noticed. We talking cold calling and sales and start with tight rhymes. Round here, we maintaining a 4x pipeline.